If you were going to die tomorrow, how would you prepare? That was a question that came up on Family Feud a few days ago, and it was interesting because, of course, the answers always came up as go to Vegas or party, finish my bucket list. And it actually got me to thinking about a friend of mine who I had been meaning to get in touch with, who literally has had to answer that question way too many times. And usually having to hear that question in reality once is enough to make somebody insane. But to hear it multiple times, well, I can't imagine what that would be like. But my friend tonight is going to be sharing his journey and his story about having to deal with that exact situation. So I wanted to give a little bit of a preamble to the show for my regular listeners to let you know that tonight is not going to be about tech. It is going to be about life, real stories, real life. And for those of you who are listening to this podcast for the first time that are maybe members of the Palm Beach Atlanta community or somebody that knows Todd Shoemaker, I encourage you to not just listen to it, but hopefully be encouraged by it. One of the things that I came across in looking for research on this is a meme that says, "Don't put being happy on a to-do list." Todd has certainly not done that. And I hope that if you're listening to this show, that you will walk away and feel exactly how he does. Don't wait to begin your life or live your dream. And welcome to another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a great show for you tonight. I'll explain that in just a little bit. But I do want to say hello and welcome to the show. You can always find information on the Pod Nuts Pro show at the website podnuts.com. That's P-O-D-N-U-T-Z. And the show does not have a sponsor tonight, but I do want to make sure that you will basically take advantage of our affiliates. And I'm going to list them in the show note. The ones specifically that are with this show, obviously, you know, are Freedom Voice, the voice over IP company that I have started to use. And I am very, very happy with, you know, a Fabs Auto Backup, the program that every tech should have when you're talking about transferring customers from an old system to a new system, or if you just want to transfer a user profile in a network or anything like that, Fabs Auto Backup is a fantastic program. And then, of course, our friends from Malwarebytes has a program, and you want to get involved with the TechBench program. I'll have a link there. We used to have a promotion with them. That promotion ended. However, it is still a great bargain. Even if you just simply use the Malwarebytes tool set, and folks, that, you know, is a lot of tools to help you diagnose your computer, do some quick malware scans. There are other tools built into that to help you support your customers' computers. It is a fantastic deal at almost any price. So you want to be able to go to my show notes and grab on those. And then, of course, if you head over to Podnuts and head over to the affiliates page, there's some other sponsors on there as well. And I think that's going to do it for tonight's housekeeping. I have no announcements. However, if you want to hear some of more up-to-date announcements, be sure to head over to Facebook. I've started a new little page over there. It is called Podnuts Pro. If you just go to Facebook, type in Podnuts Pro, you'll find me there. I've been doing updates on a regular basis, usually on a Thursday or Friday, just to talk about some things that have gone on during the week. That's probably a little bit more of a format that allows me to speak a little bit more freely about stuff and stuff that doesn't necessarily fall into the format of a podcast. So head on over there, facebook.com, Prodnuts Pro. All right, folks. So tonight's show, I wanted to do something a little bit different. As you may have paid attention to the shows, we do things a little off topic sometimes. Yeah, of course, we do something like Star Wars, but I've been trying to do more shows that will help in other areas, not just in tech, but things that will help us either from a business owner perspective or even in this case, a life perspective. We have had in our industry a lot of people complaining about stuff, whether it's clients or money or long work hours, things like that, that just sometimes get us down and we really don't stay focused on the end goal. So I wanted to reach out to a friend of mine who I've been meaning to do this for quite some time. And I wanted to give you a show that was simply about encouragement, something that would actually push you forward in life. You can, you know, apply this to tech, but you can apply this to just about anything. But I gave you a little hint last week. His nickname is the Blessed Overcomer. And I am going to introduce right now my friend Todd Shoemaker. Todd, how are you doing, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, I should probably mention to people, your voice came in a little funny there. Todd uses a voice box to speak. And so you're going to, you're not going to hear a crisp, clear voice all the time. It is good most of the time, but just in case, that is what is happening there. So, Todd, why don't we just go back and talk about how you and I met, and let's do a little background for everybody to understand your and I situation.
Okay.
I don't remember much about that. So we went to the school, Palm Beach Atlantic. It is now university, but back when I attended, it was Palm Beach Atlantic College.
Yeah, me too.
And I graduated in 89. You graduated in 91.
Yes.
So I guess I need to ask, so that means that you were either on campus for 2 years while I was there. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, about 2 years.
Okay. And I don't remember us having any classes together, do you?
No, I don't think we had any classes together.
Okay.
Just kind of knew a lot of the same people.
Okay. I was going to say, what did we have in common? All right. And so you graduated there in 91. So folks, Palm Beach Atlantic University, just so you know, fantastic university. Everybody loved it because it was on the Intracoastal in Palm Beach, Florida, literally at the corner of the bridge that goes over to Palm Beach. We're talking Worth Avenue, all those places. So it is a fantastic place to be. Even if you hate school, you're going to love the views out of the classrooms and stuff. So Todd, just give us a little bit about how life was for you back in the days of PBA.
I was a speech and communications and theater major. So spent a lot of time doing theater at that time. And I was somewhat new to my faith at that time. I had been a Christian for a while, but was still trying to figure what all that meant out. So I was fortunate to have some really great roommates and some great friends who and some great professors. As you remember, we pretty much had one-on-one time with most of our professors.
Yes.
Back then.
Yep.
Because the class sizes were so much smaller.
Yes.
So we were able to do that. So, but yeah, I mean, I was pretty much an average student. I probably liked to socialize more than I liked to study.
Well, I think that's most college students.
Yeah. So I mean, like I said, I was pretty much an average student. I had some great memories.
Yeah. So just to give a perspective on class size, so my junior and senior years, I had some classes in the math, which was, I had a second degree in math. Don't ask me why. Don't ever use it. But I had classes like Calculus 2, Calculus 3, Linear Algebra, Abstract Algebra. My class sizes for those particular classes averaged 3.
Yeah. I mean, it was just... I had the rest of my speech classes average about 4 or 5 people.
Yep. So it was a school, and at the time, they were trying to limit the school size to 1,500. I don't know if that was the case after I left. I know that they were right on the cusp of wanting to become a university, do more in sports.
Right.
So I don't know how long after that the school actually grew. It was associated, Joe, you mentioned that, you know, you were new to the faith. The school is associated with First Baptist Church of West Palm Beach.
Right.
So just letting everybody know that those statements may pop up every now and then, but that's the reason why. It was a faith-based school. It was not, you didn't have to be a member of the church or anything to go. Certainly, I was not a member, and I can attest to that by the amount of times I got in trouble. So, all right. So, Todd, tell us a little bit about your story. So I obviously know a little bit, and I know that the time that I saw you after school was a big gap. I mean, I think it was 2014.
Probably about 2014, yeah. Okay. So 20-something years, yeah.
All right. And I did not know any of the history of things that had happened to you. But for the most part, the one thing I remembered about that night is the fact that it was told to us that you really weren't expected to live past 2003.
True, yeah. I was, I lived a pretty regular life. Got married in 1999, and I had been working in juvenile probation for most of my career. And 2000, and just so people kind of understand the story, in 2002, I had traveled to New York City with the church that my wife and I were attending at that time, and went up with about 500 middle school and high school students, and we just ministered to families that had either lost someone during 9/11, or some had lost parents, some of them had lost children, and we just kind of went up there just to, you know, kind of encourage and just kind of listen and be there for folks. And as I was preparing for that trip, people kept saying, oh, your first time in New York City, you got to eat at this restaurant. So I had like, Marvin, I had like a huge list of restaurants. And I told my wife, I'm going to come back with at least 15 pounds, you know, but I'm going to hit every one of those restaurants.
All right. Yeah. Sounds like a mission.
Yeah, so I got up there on a Saturday afternoon, and Saturday night, I just really felt God calling me to fast. And I thought, okay, well, I can go without breakfast the next morning, no big deal. And I felt God saying, no, I need you to fast all week. And I was like, well, hold on, God. For one, I've never fasted for a week. For two, I'm responsible for like 500 kids, so I need all the strength that I can get. So, make a long story short, finally, God just kind of said, Todd, you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. I'm not going to force you to do anything. So I decided to fast. I had a great week, but when I got home, I mentioned to my wife, I said, you know, I'm not really quite sure why I fasted. And she said, well, you know, God may show you and be preparing you for something in the future. Well, fast forward a year later, actually in 2002, I had been diagnosed with 4 different types of crippling arthritis, and was told that I would either be in a wheelchair within 5 years or I would be dead within 5 years, and was on a bunch of meds, and some of those meds I had some really adverse reactions to, and come to find out in 2003, I was diagnosed with a rare type of cancer that sometimes can mask itself as arthritis. So I really never had arthritis. I had cancer at that time, but thank goodness it was caught very early. I opted to have open heart surgery to remove the tumor instead of going through chemo and radiation. And during that surgery, to remove the tumor, I had a vision that God wanted me to start running marathons. And I had never run a marathon in my life and had not run in probably 15 years at that point. So about 4 months after having open heart surgery and being diagnosed with cancer, I completed my first marathon.
So now let's just quickly go back, because I want people to understand the cancer that you were diagnosed with was thymus, correct?
Correct.
Which basically, as far as I remember it, it's actually an organ that is around the chest bone and basically is, you know, part of the lymph system and the white blood cells. And that's, you know, if you got that, you shouldn't be running, right?
They were pretty surprised that I even attempted to do that. But you know, I started running about 4 months after having open heart surgery, which I was actually not supposed to even be back to work for 3 months after surgery. And I made it back to work in 3 weeks after surgery. Mm. So just the power of trying to look past the negatives and looking at the positives of every situation. And you know, I had a great team of doctors. I had a great team of people around me to help me get through that, which, you know, as you know, when you've got a great team around you, it kind of makes things a little bit easier to get through.
Well, that's true. Having a team helps, but let's get past the initial shock of hearing that you have cancer. Most people, at least back then, that's a death sentence. That's something that people aren't necessarily thinking, hey, I'm going to go run marathons later. What was it that when you got that diagnosis that made you think, I'm going to run?
I had been a runner in high school, and I'd always told myself, one day I'm going to get back to running. And I just had no clue it would be in that fashion of being diagnosed with cancer and then deciding that. But I've always, as you'll find out, you know, and as you know personally, Marvin, knowing my story, you know, I've been diagnosed with several different health issues. And every time I'm diagnosed with something, I kind of do something to celebrate that diagnosis. And it's not that I'm celebrating that diagnosis that I'm happy that I've been diagnosed with something, but I'm celebrating it because I want that diagnosis to know that that's not who I am. Just because that diagnosis is on me doesn't mean I'm a cancer patient. You know, it doesn't own me.
Right.
So in each of my diagnoses, I've tried to do something to kind of celebrate those diagnoses so they know that that diagnosis doesn't have control of me.
All right. So you were diagnosed with cancer in 2003. You decided to run marathons. 2007, you get hit again.
Yeah, 2007, yeah. I was out running one night, and my wife was riding her bike, and she stopped me and said, "Why aren't you moving your right arm back and forth?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Well, when you run, and even when you walk, I notice that your right arm just lays there. It doesn't move." And I said, "I never noticed it." And so that was 2006, so about 6 months to almost a year of ruling everything out, I was diagnosed with young onset Parkinson's at that time. And I was almost 41 at that point. So my first question to the doctor when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's is, "Can I keep running?" And he said, "You can do whatever you can do as long as your body allows you to do it." So once again, to celebrate being diagnosed with Parkinson's and to let it know that it wasn't a charge, I went skydiving like the next weekend.
The very next weekend.
Yeah. Of course, I didn't tell them that I had Parkinson's, but they didn't ask. So I didn't figure that I was lying to anybody.
Don't ask, don't tell, right?
That's right.
Oh, my. So at this point in time, were you starting to develop this bucket list of things that you were going to do? And was it something where, you know, most people will do a bucket list to say, well, before I go, I'm going to do these things.
Right.
But
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty much kind of, and I kind of refer to my bucket list as a passion bucket.
Okay.
Because there's things, those are things that I'm passionate about, and just things that, opportunities that, have opened up due to this, due to me being sick. And, you know, a lot of people, especially if you've been diagnosed with cancer, and then a few years later, you're diagnosed with Parkinson's, most people, we tend to think that, well, man, something must really be wrong with me, and kind of get down in the dumps. But I've always kind of been a person that always looked at the positives. And the positives was, okay, cancer, okay, I learn about it. And that's one reason I started running marathons, is because during each marathon, my wife would make shirts with people's names on it that couldn't run due to some health issue. So I would run for them, which is amazing now, because now people are doing that for me. Hmm. So there's people that they run at least 1 mile for me now when they're out running. So it's pretty cool how that's happened.
Now, how did that come about? I mean, was it something that you just thought of on your own, or was there a particular situation that you thought, well, I found somebody who can't run, I can, let me run for you? I mean, how did that happen?
Well, actually, what happened is about a year after my diagnosis, my wife's mother was diagnosed with cancer, and fit woman, never smoked in her life, never drank in her life, and was diagnosed with lung cancer. And unfortunately, about 2 years after her diagnosis, she passed away. But I started running for her. And then people started finding out, and they're like, hey, can you run for my mom or my grandmother or my daughter or whoever it might be? So I just started adding these names to shirts. And it was a great conversation piece when I was running, because, of course, you got a bunch of names on a shirt. People are going to ask, what's that about? So it gave me an opportunity to not only share my story, but to share their story, so people could learn how they could support these different folks and these different illnesses that they were dealing with.
All right. So Parkinson's in 2007, after having a cancer diagnosis in 2003,
yeah.
Things should have been, you know, stabilizing or hopefully looking better, but in 2009, yet another thing.
Yeah, 2009, actually, you know, 2008, I woke up on New Year's morning, and I felt God telling me that he wanted me to run 1,000 miles that year. And of course, at this point, you know, Parkinson's is getting a little bit worse.
Okay.
My times have slowed down as far as my running is concerned. But I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm gonna take this challenge and see if I can do it. So, at the end of the year, I was able to complete the 1,000 miles. But most people will tell you, my wife being the number one person, that every time I came across the finish line, people thought I was dead. Like my body was just, and I had no clue at that point that my body was shutting down. So in January of 2009, I ran Disney. The Disney Marathon, and just weeks after that, I just didn't feel good. I thought, oh, I got a cold, you know, it's wintertime. And in March of 2009, my wife took me to the emergency room, and the staff there pulled her aside and said, you know, I hope Todd has his affairs in order, because he's not going to make it through the night. So my wife, you know, here's my wife being told that her husband is not going to make it in the next 24 hours. And what's amazing about that is, Marvin, a lot of people ask me, oh my goodness, like, what did you pray? Like, what did you and God talk about that you're still here? And I said, you know, the funny thing is the only two things that I could think to pray at that point was, I said, God, I just don't ever want to look sick, and I don't ever want to act sick. And I said, if you just help me in those two things, I don't really care what else happens. Well, of course, I made it through the night. And they told my wife, well, he won't make it through the weekend. And 22 days later, I walked out of ICU, went back to work the following week. And that just started a year of working for about 3 days and then being in the hospital for like 3 weeks. And they pretty much said I wouldn't make it through 2009. Like, they didn't know how I was still alive. But what's amazing about that, Marvin, is in 2007, I had been watching a TV show about human trafficking. And I thought to myself, you know, I want to learn more about that. And I told my wife, I said, you know, if I ever have the time, I said, I would fight human trafficking and do it for free. And my wife's like, well, you never know what God might do in the future. Well, in 2009, I was told that, one, I could never run again, that my body just couldn't handle that, and that I couldn't work again. And at that point, I was diagnosed with what's called myasthenia gravis, which is an illness that kind of eats your muscles away. But when I was told that I couldn't work again, once again, God said, well, guess what? It looks like you're going to have a lot of time to work on fighting human trafficking. So since 2009, I help out about 4 or 5 different organizations with their social media pages on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, and help fight human trafficking. I've actually taught classes on how to investigate human trafficking. And so what should have been a negative has really turned into a positive, because I've been able to really put my energy into fighting this crime of human trafficking.
So that is something that you've done. I should probably go ahead and mention at this point that you also have a blog that you do. It's at the website, theblessedovercomer.com.
.org.
Okay, I'm sorry, .org. So theblessedovercomer.org. You also do, I don't know if it's not daily, but it's pretty darn close to a daily, I want to say vlog or video on Facebook.
Just trying to encourage people, going through the day.
Yeah. And you made a statement that I was going to ask you about later, but we'll go ahead and talk about it now. The statement that you made, never wanted to look or act sick. Basically, that came, I first remember that from page 69 of your book. And I'm going to tell people that I've got a link to a book called The Blessed Overcomer, The Crazy, Beautiful Journey of Todd and Laura Shoemaker. So I have this book, and I've, just so you know, Todd, I have read it, and I've got notes in it. And specifically on page 69, I circled that. And, you know, you talk a little bit later on that page about not being Mr. Positive all the time. However, the comment that stuck out to me was the one where it says you never wanted to look or act sick. And what made you want to think like that?
Well, you know, it's amazing, because I asked myself that when I thought of those two things, because I thought, okay, well, I got 24 hours to live, and I'm worried about not looking sick or acting sick. But what's amazing about that, Marvin, is in the 10 years since then, I've had more conversations with people who come up to me and say, really, you're sick? Well, you don't look sick and you don't act sick. And I'm able to share my story and encourage them in their journey. And, you know, what's been amazing is, Marvin, not as much now, because my health is kind of at a point where being in the hospital is kind of a little bit more dangerous than it is good for me to be in the hospital. But, for the last 10 years, I averaged about 150 days a year in the hospital. And during those times, I decided, if I'm going to be in the hospital, and if I'm going to be at a doctor's office, or if I'm going to be getting treatments, I don't want to just sit there and not make a difference. So I've taken those opportunities to just encourage people, to try to listen to people and hear their stories, and just really try to help people going through their own crazy, beautiful journey. And I think it's helped me not focus on myself and not make it about me.
Right. So the other reason that that quote struck me is my wife had a best friend who was diagnosed with a rare liver cancer. I think it's going on 5 or 6 years ago now. And she passed away 2.5 years ago. So she did not fare as well, but she had that same philosophy where she did not want anybody to see her and in her mind, not feel pity on her for being sick. She worked every day. She basically did everything as normal as she could, so much to the point that when she did go into the hospital and, you know, for the last time, there was literally 2 days where people just were like, okay, we just saw her. She was just doing this and that as if everything was normal. And, you know, the mental fortitude to live that way, you know, to not let something affect you and in an outward appearance, be able to let people know that I'm fine. I'm normal. Don't look at me this way.
Well, you know, the thing is too, is I think, you know, I think even back to 2003 when I started running, all my doctors that have met me over the years have said the reason I survived that initial onslaught in 2009 was because I was in such good physical condition. And they said the reason that I'm able to do so well mentally is because as a runner, I mean, you're always dealing with hitting that wall, you know, as you're running, you know, because I mean, my average run was 20 miles every time out. Right. I didn't do like a mile or two. I did like 20 miles out each time out. And it just made me mentally tough. And I think that was just preparing me for this journey of being dealing with these health issues for all these years, because I mentally can just, I kind of look at it, Marvin, I kind of look at my journey as a marathon. And in a marathon, you do 1 mile at a time. Right. You can't run the whole 26.2 miles at one time. And I kind of look at my journey that way, that I can't walk this whole journey in one trip. It's going to take one step at a time. And that's just kind of how, I live.
All right. So I want to be able to keep people on track with what we're talking about here, because, you know, we've talked about now 3 major events in somebody's life where most people, you know, that's pretty much going to be it. But I have to say that even I was shocked, because I did not know that in 2015, there was going to be yet another diagnosis.
Yeah.
Again, something that, you know, most people can't imagine going through.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Marvin, because in 2009, my running weight was about, I was about 150 pounds okay. of my running weight. And to keep me alive, they had to put me on a lot of steroids. And steroids really put a lot of weight on me. And I went up to over 200 pounds. And I just couldn't take that weight off because I couldn't exercise anymore. And I used to always tell my wife, man, I wish I could just lose this weight. And starting in 2015, I just started having issues eating. Like I would eat, take one bite of food, and I'd be full. Well, I was diagnosed at that point with what's called gastroparesis, which pretty much paralyzes your stomach. So you can't really digest food very well. And I ended up having a gastro pacemaker, which kind of like, it's like a heart pacemaker, but it's for your stomach. And that kind of helps your stomach be able to stimulate a little bit more. And it's more for the nausea than it is for anything else. But from late 2000, about the middle of 2016, to the first of 2017, I lost 90 pounds. And I was given 2 weeks to live when they put my feeding tube in. They said I wouldn't probably survive 2 weeks. And so here we are in 2019, almost 2020. So I've been on a feeding tube since then.
All right, so you've had myasthenia gravis, which basically is a muscular disease. And then you've got gastroparesis, which, I mean, you're talking about the feeling of fullness, but it's literally the body cannot empty itself of food. You've got symptoms such as, you know, you mentioned the nausea, heartburn, vomiting. I mean, these are pretty grueling things to have to go through. And I mean, how did you, again, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, most people get hit with one thing, you know, oh, woe is me. A second thing, double woe is me. But now this is basically a fourth major diagnosis. What was it that, you know, told you not to give up?
Well, I mean, I have a wonderful life that that I wanted to continue to make memories with. So that's been a motivation. And I think I think it goes back to me being a runner in a lot of ways, being a runner in my faith has just kind of helped me through this. And, you know, that's why, you know, every time you kind of turn around, my wife and I are doing these trips, because I don't know how much longer I'll be able to make these trips. Right. And I don't know where my health is going to be a month from now. So, you know, we just started trying to make these memories, and that, I think, has motivated me to just keep pushing forward, because I don't want, my thought pattern is, I don't want, whenever my time comes, I don't want to think back, oh man, I wish we would have done that trip. I wish we would have done that. So we're just doing it. You know, and those trips are physically tough on me. I mean, it's probably not the wisest move physically, health-wise, but man, just to see my wife so happy and to see the memories that we're making, it's worth everything that I have to deal with to make those things happen.
Yes, and folks, his wife Laura is an amazing person. We have met her, and she has literally been by his side throughout the journey. And you, if you do get the book, and I encourage everyone to get the book, you'll see that they share the journey together. Let's talk about some of these trips, because I know we talked about the early stuff where you did the marathons, you went skydiving the weekend after being diagnosed. But you've done some things such as you took a cruise. Was it last, not this past summer, but the summer before?
No, this last summer, yeah.
Oh, was this last summer? Okay.
Yeah, went to Cuba, tell us, and then went to Alaska.
Cuba and Alaska. Not the same cruise, right?
Not the same cruise. No, a week, 2 weeks apart.
Okay. So the Alaska cruise, I know that some people do. Those are long cruises. That's not like your weekend or, you know.
Right.
You know, you took, I think it was it a full 7 or 10 days?
Full 7 days, but we were out of town for like 12.
Okay. Because you got to travel. Where did you actually go out of port?
Went to Seattle and went out of Seattle, port in Seattle.
All right. So long plane ride.
Yes.
Or two? Did you have to take two flights?
Took two flights, and actually on the way up to the first flight, I actually perforated both my eardrums.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and you still went on the cruise.
We're on the cruise.
Yeah. Did you have to do anything special with the eardrums?
No, because at that point I didn't know that I had done it. I just thought I was just having ear issues. It wasn't until I got back and I said, I need to go see the ear specialist to see what's going on. And she's like, oh, you got two perforated eardrums. Mm. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, just add that to the list, right?
She's like, was it painful? And I'm like, yeah, it was painful, but I mean, I kind of live with pain, so to me, it was just kind of a normal day.
Yeah. All right. So you did the cruises, and then just recently, and I really want to talk about this part, because the process of getting to this event seems pretty strenuous. You went to see President Jimmy Carter in one of his famous Sunday school classes.
Yes, September, yeah. We went up in September, so last month, yeah.
Yep. So that is a Sunday school class that President Jimmy Carter teaches, not every week, but every now and then, in Plains, Georgia. And it is a free event.
Yes.
It's seats are filled on a first-come, first-served basis, but are very limited, obviously. But it's not like you just show up and get in. You've got to actually, you know, camp out almost.
Yeah, he starts teaching Sunday school at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, and you have to go through an orientation at 9. So when we got there on a Saturday, and actually Friday night, and we started asking people, like, well, what time do you think we should show up? And some people said, well, some people start showing up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturdays, and some people wait until 6 o'clock Sunday morning. So my wife and I agreed that we would get there by at least midnight on Saturday. So we got there at 11 Saturday night and camped out with about close to 100 other people, and got to know some of President Carter's friends, and actually was able to meet President Carter briefly and Mrs. Carter. So we're actually going back in November. We're going back next month to see President and Mrs. Carter again.
Hmm. Now, you talked about going there, you know, trying to be there by midnight. So even the official literature of all the visitors' guides in Georgia say that, you know, the suggested time to get there is 5:30 a.m. And part of that is because starting at 8 a.m., you have to go through a Secret Service security check.
Yes.
So you're not guaranteed to get in just because you show up.
Yeah, I mean, if you're within a certain range, yeah, but there, like the week before we went, actually 100 people got turned away.
Hmm.
So.
All right. And then, of course, you mentioned the 9 a.m. orientation. Of course, I'm assuming that's to go over all the proper etiquette on how to, you know, conduct yourself around the former president.
And, yeah, it's pretty interesting because they tell you don't stand up, don't applaud when he comes in, because his feeling is he's just showing up for church. So he doesn't want all the fanfare.
Mm. Interesting. All right. So those were the two things that I had wanted to talk about, the cruise and the Sunday school class. Is there anything else that, you know, even I don't know that you've done recently that is noteworthy?
I wouldn't say anything noteworthy. I'm just continuing to be just really blessed during this journey that I'm being able to meet people that I never thought I would meet. This coming Friday, actually Friday morning, I'm having surgery, outpatient surgery, just to put in a new feeding tube. But then Friday night, I'm actually having dinner with Johnny Bench, Hall of Fame catcher from the Cincinnati Reds.
Interesting. How did that come about?
A friend of mine is their neighbors, so they're setting that up. So it's going to be a little bit of a busy Friday, but you know, outpatient surgery, it's kind of old hat at this point. So
right.
Yeah.
All right. So just to go back and do a couple of notes, I skipped over a couple of questions I had, but okay. the voice box, when did you have to get that?
I've probably had this for about 3 years now.
Okay.
Yeah, because without it, I mean, I'm pretty much at a whisper without it. So and that's just part of the Parkinson's, which actually the gastroparesis is actually part of the Parkinson's too.
Right.
Latest study from the Michael J. Fox Foundation shows that for a lot of Parkinson's patients, their Parkinson's starts with stomach issues, not brain issues. So they think that I kind of fell into that part of having stomach issues before I ever had any issues with the Parkinson's. And just one quick note with Parkinson's is I don't have a family history of Parkinson's on either side of my parents. There's nobody that's ever had Parkinson's. So the theory is that when someone under 50 is diagnosed with Parkinson's, unless it's a family hereditary thing, that it's caused by the environment. So the belief is that somewhere along the line, something that I came in contact with in the environment caused my Parkinson's. Mm.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, what else did I mean to ask that we skipped over? Let's go back to the beginning because I didn't get to ask this and I skipped over it. So at Palm Beach Atlantic, for some reason, I seem to remember baseball. Now, I know you said you were a runner. Did you play baseball for PBA?
I didn't. Okay. I mean, I lived in an athletic dorm, but I didn't play baseball.
Well, how'd you swing that?
Just the way it happened. you might have had classes with one of my roommates, Tim Tate, who was actually Mary Babb's bar.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So somehow we all got stuck in an athletic dorm.
Yeah. Tim Tate. And Babb's bar was my secretary the year that I was president of the student government.
Yes.
And Tim, why am I thinking soccer for him?
You might be thinking of a different Tim. It was a different Tim that played soccer that hung out with the same group.
Okay. Small school, so we kind of things happened back then. All right. And the other question I had was, it was going to be based around, so you got interviewed in July of this year by our local news station.
Yes.
And it was, it was kind of funny. The title was The Man Who Wouldn't Die.
Right. Well, that's kind of my nickname that people have given me. One of my former pastors, years ago, nicknamed me the man that refuses to die.
Right.
So I kind of run with that. So a lot of people that I don't even know have come up and said, you're Todd Shoemaker. You're the guy that refuses to die. And I'm like, yeah, that's me.
Yep. Good nickname to have. So on that news clip, it mentioned that you are basically still out meeting with groups on a regular basis, not just sharing your story, but giving these talks of encouragement and things like that. Is that like an active schedule that you're doing, or how is that going?
It's pretty active. I spoke a few weeks ago at a men's luncheon. And actually, what's interesting about that interview, Marvin, is that I'm not sure if you're aware, but when I first started PBA, I wanted to be a civil rights attorney. And of course, I like to play way too much. So being an attorney just didn't work out. Mm. But I've always had a heart for civil rights. And my wife and I actually, a few years ago, were invited up to Montgomery, Alabama, to be part of a civil rights summit. And so when the reporter was at the house, he saw some of the different things that we have on the laws concerning civil rights. And he asked about that, and we talked about that off camera. Well, actually, hopefully in February or March of next year, hopefully I'm going to be leading a group of men from different faiths, from different backgrounds to... hopefully leading them on a trip to Montgomery, Alabama, to do a civil rights road trip and go to Selma, Alabama, because that'll be the 55th anniversary of the march from Selma to Montgomery. So those things, I don't believe those things would have happened had I not been going through this journey, because I think I would have been so caught up and so busy with life that I would have not made time for those things. So, when people look at my story, sometimes they look at my story and go, oh, this poor guy, everything that he's been through. But the opportunities that I've been blessed with to be a part of. I don't think those things would have happened because I think I, like most people, I was busy with my career, and that's what made me tick. And having these health issues just really slowed me down and made me decide, okay, do you really? I have a saying, Marvin, that we can choose to survive in life or we can choose to thrive in life. And I choose to thrive every day and trying to encourage people and trying to make a difference in people's lives.
Well, Todd, that is certainly something that resonates with me. And the fact that you made the statement about sometimes we are just simply too busy living our life. And that's partly how I felt in the fact that I have known for a long time that I needed to reach out to you. And, you know, you're not far from me. You're in Jupiter. I'm in Fort Lauderdale. I mean, it's not really that hard. But, you know, even I get to the point where I realize, you know what, I'm living my life too much to the point that I'm not really living life.
Yeah.
And the things that, you know, we should be focused on that are really important to us, we let other things get in the way. So I really wanted to reach out to you and make this effort to do this. And I'm sitting here thinking, one, how do I not know that you wanted to be a civil rights attorney back then?
But, you know, but the thing too, Marvin, just to go back to the busyness is I try to share with people when I do my talks, especially when I'm talking to men, you know, because men tend to really get caught up in their careers and doing.
Right.
But what I try to share with people is that don't wait until you're basically given a death sentence to start living life. Now, I enjoyed life before I got sick. I wasn't the type of person that I look back and go, oh my goodness, you know, I was going down this one path and I got sick and I started. I always enjoyed life, but I was just like everybody else. What's the next meeting? What's the next project? What's the next goal to meet? And through this 17, almost 18 year journey now, God's really showed me what's important in life. And I don't think, you know, I mean, you know how important my faith is, but I think anybody, regardless if they have faith or if they don't live a life of faith, everybody needs to live a life of serving others, however that looks. And that's just my encouragement to people is slow down enough. And one of the things that I came up with a few years ago was beautiful interruptions. And beautiful interruptions are those times when maybe you're at the grocery store and that cashier seems a little slow. Instead of being frustrated by that, maybe check and see how they're doing. Maybe they've just had a rough day. And to me, that's a beautiful interruption that I took time to look past my what's going on in my life, and I focused in on what's going on in somebody else's life.
Absolutely good words there. And folks, you can get a lot more of that. And I'm going to mention again the book, The Blessed Overcomer. I'm just reading a couple of statements off the back where, you know, it says, does this sound like a good story? This is our story. Has your faith been shaken? Have your relationships been rocked by your circumstances? Do you need encouragement along your journey? I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've thought about stuff. And like I mentioned earlier at the start of the show where we, you know, we complain a lot. We complain a lot about things that really, yeah, they may be important at the time, but in the long run, they're not that important.
You know? Yeah. And it's, you know, it's like what we were just talking, you know, don't wait until some major event happens in life that you go, oh, wait a second, maybe I need to really start spending more time with my family, or I need to start taking those trips. Because I tell people the perfect time to take the trip is now. The perfect time isn't, well, when I retire, I'm going to take this trip. And when the kids grow up and are out of the house, I'll take that trip. The best timing for a trip is now.
Absolutely.
And making those memories now, because I mean, you know, that's one thing. Even when my wife and I were traveling to John Hopkins back in 2009, we always made a trip out of it. We always made an adventure out of it. We stayed at bed and breakfast. We went to different, you know, did different things to make memories instead of focusing in on the medical. We focused in on what kind of memory can we make.
All right. Well, Todd, I want to thank you for agreeing to do this show with me.
And, well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I can tell you this. We need to make sure that we don't wait so long again. And I told you I've been meaning to do this. Definitely, we're going to talk again. I really want to see what happens in February or March when you go up there. And I want to see what we can do about that. I also want to...
join us.
If I have time, join us. Well, I have to plan ahead, but maybe that should be something we do.
Yeah.
I did want to ask one question. So I've got, obviously, a link to your book on Amazon. I also came across your GoFundMe page when you guys were trying to raise money for this. Did you guys self-publish this book?
Yeah, we did self-publish the book, but well, technically, no, we didn't, because we actually had a publisher and some writers who helped put my words into book form. So technically, we didn't, but we had a lot of people that really blessed us and helped us in being able to pay for the book to get published.
Okay. Because I saw on the GoFundMe page that you did not reach the goal, so I just wanted to ask you.
Well, we actually did reach the goal.
Okay.
We just didn't update it.
Okay.
Yeah. We did actually reach the goal, though. Yeah. We actually surpassed it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I just wanted to make sure. And if not, we were going to direct people to that site to help out. But regardless, the link for the book will be in my show notes, folks, so you can go and purchase the book. It's
one quick thing, Marvin, is if anybody buys the book and ever wants or they want a signed copy of the book, they can just reach me on my website and or on my Facebook page, and they can we can get that out to them if anybody would ever want a signed copy, whether for themselves or for maybe somebody else that's kind of going through a journey of health right now, that they might find that book to be encouraging.
All right. Well, sounds good. I will put every link that we can get together on there. I will also make sure that I send this podcast not just to my regular listeners, but we'll find the groups for Palm Beach Atlantic and for some of your friends and anybody who wants to listen to this show, and afterwards reach out and purchase the book or reach out and get in touch with you.
Yeah. And just one quick thing, Marvin, is I just want to encourage people that, you know, a lot of people always comment on how strong I am. And I always let people know, People are much stronger than they think, and anybody could go through what I'm going through, and they could have the positive attitude and everything. It's just making that choice. And each day I get up, each morning, and I make the choice to make the day a positive day. And that doesn't mean that I don't have bad days, but I just try not to stay in those bad days.
All right. Great words to live by, folks. And, you know, I was struggling with trying to figure out a way to end this show. And I used to end my show, Todd, with quotes by Benjamin Franklin. So I was looking for some stuff around, and I have a quote that I found from him that basically reads, "Happiness depends more on the inward disposition of mind than on outward circumstances."
Amen.
So that's how we're going to do it. Folks, once again, Todd Shoemaker, the Blessed Overcomer. I will have all of the links to everything we talked about in the show notes. Todd, thank you very much for coming on. We will stay in touch, and I will follow the journey. And ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have more shows like this in the future. And I encourage you that if you are going through something and you need some encouragement, think about Todd. I do. There are times where I will get up in the morning and I'll just get that little notification of a live show on Facebook, and I'll pop in and just listen to Todd, and he'll share his stories, share his faith, pray for people. And that's what we should be doing in life, folks. So that's going to do it for this episode of Pod Nuts Pro. And until next time. Holla.